Blog Talk Radio.
Cannot play with them. Cannot win with them. Cannot coach with them. Can't do it. I want winners.
A new record, Michael Strahan. 22 and a half sacks. Breaks the block held by Mark Gatineau.
Just put your name on it. That's all I say. Be a man or a woman. Put your name on it.
Santonio with a touchdown. Santonio home. I don't know how he did it.
I'm raising the ante. Anybody wants in, get in. Anybody wants out, get out.
Devin Hester, you are ridiculous.
That's got to be one of those top 10 plays on SportsCenter YouTube.
Stay calm. Let's keep our composure.
A lot of time and patience.
Good skiller stuff. You're never too old for skill.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Boston Sports Beat. I am your host, Jesse Mayfield Sheehan, and I am joined by my colleague, Xander Manning. Xander, how are you doing today?
Doing pretty good. Nice day out today. Can't complain.
I know. It's beautiful. We've had some very strange weather this week. It's been a bit of rain, snow, hail. So New England's trying to throw everything it can at us this week, but we're not going
to
stop. We can't stop
degrees.
And we won't stop. Yeah, but we can't stop and we won't stop. We will talk about Boston sports today, and we're going to get right to it. So much to talk about. We're going to start off by talking about the Boston Red Sox. The season is on. Baseball is here. Spring must be on the way if it's not here already, since the Red Sox are playing. They got off to a great start against Philadelphia, scored 16 runs over those first three games, and won two out of three in that series. And then just a thriller last night against the Yankees. 19 innings of work and finally came away with the win 6-5. Currently in the middle of another game against the Yankees right now. Joe Kelly back on the mound after starting the season on the 15-day DL, so good for the Red Sox to see him back on the mound, back at work for them. So, you know, a lot of excitement so early in the season. So, Xander, my question to you is, what are your thoughts on how the Sox have been doing so far, and who and what has really stood out to you so far?
Well, first of all, finally, a Boston team that can support its defense, unlike the Bruins, on the other hand. Just had to mention that.
That's fair. So what are your thoughts on the Sox play so far, and who and what has really stood out to you?
I love this team right now. I mean, I know we're only four games into the season, but I love the way they're playing. I love how they almost swept the Phillies. I mean, they've always had great numbers when they play down in Philadelphia, but this is a different Red Sox team. This is a team that killed the Phillies. Like you mentioned, 16 runs in the first three games. I don't think I've seen that in a long time, if ever, with the Red Sox when they played down in Philly. I like how they kept on fighting, kept on hitting. Last night is a perfect example of the fight that they have in them. Like I feel like they really have a want to win. They really want to do well this season. They're not just going to win this division by default, like a lot of people are saying they will, but I think they're going to do a lot more than that. But a player that stuck out to me, and I'm not saying this because he has the same name as me, they're spelled differently, I like Xander Bogaerts so far. I like how he's got the .421 average. He hasn't hit a home run yet, but that's not really that big of a deal for me. He's already hit a triple, he's got four RBIs, and he's walked three times. He's doing his job, he's getting on base, and he's helping this team out of the eighth spot. I love that.
Yeah. No, absolutely. A great start for Xander Bogaerts, and that's really huge for him considering how last season went, how things just sort of, you know, spiraled off. And, you know, people were really saying after they picked up Hanley Ramirez that, you know, Xander Bogaerts might be on some borrowed time in Boston, that maybe, you know, Hanley Ramirez might eventually move to shortstop. But Xander Bogaerts has gotten off to a great start, and if he can keep things up, he might be sticking around. But speaking of Hanley Ramirez, let's talk about the start he has had. Two home runs already, five RBIs, and a 318 batting average on top of that. His slugging is already at 591, so he's just having a heck of a season so far. He's hitting, and he's hitting big. He had two home runs on opening day, including a grand slam, so, welcome to Boston, Hanley Ramirez, absolutely. He's done a great job thus far. But absolutely, like you said, the team has come out with great energy so far. I mean, after the season that they had last year, it's kind of understandable that they would want to come out and just sort of say, last year was last year, this year is this year, and this team is this year's team. It's not last year's team. Well, we're a different team this year.
They also not only just showed that with the offense they've had so far, but also they showed that with their spending in the offseason. They spent over $90 million just to get Hanley Ramirez and Pablo Sandoval. That shows that this team wants to fill the holes. They want to win. They want to win another world championship. I don't blame them. They had a good team when they won it in 2013. They had good teams the other years, but they want to win it, and they want to win it by storm this year. And so far, I'd say pretty good. And one thing I want to point out is Hanley's play is just going to get even better when we go back to Fenway. I mean, they were talking about it last night during the game that it would be easier for him at Fenway than on the road because of the Green Monster. But also, offensively-wise, he can easily hit doubles, easily hit home runs at Fenway.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, both those guys already making an impact. Pablo Sandoval knocking in two runs in that 6-5 thriller against the Yankees last night. And like I said, Hanley Ramirez, just an offensive bomb in that opening day game against the Phillies. So hopefully we can see a lot of both of them going down the road. But let's talk about another big money story with the Red Sox. You talked about those big money signings for Ramirez and Sandoval. Let's talk about another big money story going on with the Red Sox. This one was a bit of a head-scratcher for me with Rick Porcello. Originally they were saying, okay, we're not going to talk about – or Porcello said this, rather. He said, we're not going to talk about, contracts until after the season. We're just going to leave that off until last season. And then all of a sudden, just 2 days, like 2 days later, or maybe not even, they turn around and they've got a contract extension for him for 4 years and $82.5 million before the guy even throws a pitch. And then he has his first game on Wednesday against the Phillies, and he loses the game. It was the one game they lost against the Phillies, and he's given up so far more runs than any other pitcher on the Sox. So bit of a rough start for him, certainly not something you can base anything off of, given that it's just one game, but it seemed a little weird to me. Did it seem weird to you that they just turned around and gave him an extension so quickly, Xander?
I wouldn't necessarily say it was weird. It's not just the fact that he hasn't thrown a pitch yet, it's just that he hasn't proven anything. He came into the season as a number three starter. Since when do you give number three starters 4 years extra when they haven't even done anything yet other than pitch against you in the playoffs and show that they're good? That's basically all he's shown this team. I mean, I'll give it to him. He had a decent spring. He showed them that he's a good pitcher and he can potentially be in maybe a number two, or if Buchholz leaves, a number one starter. But A, I don't think Buchholz is leaving anytime soon. And B, we have number two pitchers other than him that can replace him. And I think it's just a little too presumptuous. Like you, it's 4 years too. I think 4 years is just too long too. Maybe give him a 2 or 3 year extension, but 4? No.
Yeah. Certainly was a strange call. I mean, I can understand sort of the logic of trying to hold on to him during his more youthful years. He is sort of in the prime of his career right now, and I can understand the logic there. But still, like you're saying, he hasn't exactly proven himself yet for the team, so it is a little weird. But I can sort of see where a high-budget team like the Red Sox might pull this move off. It just, for me personally, seemed a little weird. But for right now, we're going to head to a commercial break, but you definitely want to stick around because we're going to be talking about a lot more Boston sports, and you got a couple of Boston teams that are heading right into the end of their season, and they're fighting as hard as they can for the last spot at the table in the playoffs. So you definitely want to hear about this. Please stick around. We'll be right back with the Boston Sports Beat.
Now I'm here.
Hello, and welcome back to the Boston Sports Beat. I am still your host, Jesse Mayfield Sheehan, and I am still joined by my colleague, Xander Manning. And, well, I said it before, spring is on the way. The weird weather has a strange way of letting you know that, but, you know, spring is on the way. And with that, not only comes the start of the season for the Red Sox, but also the end of the regular season for some of the winter sports like hockey and basketball. And with that, the Bruins and Celtics seasons are winding down. We're going to start off with hockey. The Boston Bruins have their last game of the regular season coming up right now. They've got it tonight. They're taking on the Tampa Bay Lightning, and currently they are just a point out of the Eastern Conference playoffs this year. Such a drop-off from where they were last year when they had the number one seed. But here's what the current situation is. First off, the Bruins need to win this game in some fashion against the Lightning tonight. That's a given, if they want to have any chance at all. The game starts tonight at 7:30, so check that out, Bruins fans. Secondly, they need either the Ottawa Senators, who are currently in the second period against the Philadelphia Flyers, to lose in regulation. Either that's one option. They need either that to happen, or they need the Pittsburgh Penguins, who will be taking on the last place in the NHL, Buffalo Sabres, tonight at 7 p.m. They needed the Penguins to lose in any fashion. The Bruins have the tiebreakers over both the Senators and Penguins, so if they can match them in points, then they get into the playoffs. But currently, it's a bit tough to be outside looking in for the Bruins. So and of course, the Senators, currently in the second period, up 2-1 on the Flyers, so things not looking so great for the Bruins. So Xander, what's your call on this? Do you think the Bruins can make it into the playoffs? Do you think all the chips can align for them?
I'm from Boston. I want to have faith, but no. I'm sorry. I don't think they're going to make the playoffs this year. That's literally the worst words to ever come out of my mouth, and I absolutely hate saying it, but no, I do not think they're going to make the playoffs this year. They cannot shut down Steven Stamkos. They cannot shut down Andre Palat, and they cannot score. And on top of that, they're going against Ben Bishop. I'm sorry, but they're done. Unless they lose in the shootout, I don't think they have any shot whatsoever.
Well, it certainly is a tough for them to make it in, and they are going against a tough Lightning team, but it is a Lightning team that has already clinched the playoffs, so maybe not a team playing as hard. I think they do have a chance to win. For me, the tough part is counting on the other teams. As I said, the Senators already up 2-1 on the Flyers, a team that has already been bounced from playoff contention and doesn't really have much to play for in this sense. Whereas the Senators could always try and move up in contention. They still have a chance for that. So they still have just a little bit more to play for than the Flyers. And as I said, they currently lead going into the last seconds of the second period in that game. And the Penguins are currently playing against a Buffalo Sabres team that, granted, has already clinched the last place in the NHL. But, I mean, the team just doesn't seem to even be trying, given that. So it's a bit hard to lose to the Sabres right now. What?
I honestly don't see the Sabres trying any year. I think they've just given up and they're just trying to get Eichel.
Yeah. No, they definitely don't seem to be trying. I mean, you know, 50 times the other team found a way to win against the Sabres this year, so it's a pretty good chance, or rather 58, 50 times in regulation, 8 times in overtime. So 58 times the Sabres have found a way to lose this this season, and there's a good odds they'll find a way to lose again tonight. So odds are not looking good for the Bruins that the chips will align. So it's disappointing. It's certainly a letdown given how where they were, you know, last season that they could, you know, miss the playoffs.
Also
certainly
not
it's
just
such a
that,
turnaround.
But the thing I want to point out too is just that one thing to everyone. Everyone's listening. I'm not saying this because they're a bad team. I love the team. It's just that their stats don't show how good this team is. They have horrible stats, but they put up a fight all season. And I really like that about this team.
No, I absolutely believe the team has potential. I just think they ran into a bit too many injury problems, a bit too many veterans left this season, and it was sort of a transitionary year is what this was. You saw some young stars rise up, you know, like Pastrnak and Spooner, who I think have a real place on this team in the future. Dougie Hamilton was looking great before he went down for the season. So I think this shows promise for the Bruins. It's just tough to go into a transitionary year after a year on top of the NHL. So on that note, we're going to move on to a team that actually looks like it's going to make the playoffs, and that's the Boston Celtics. I said it, folks. The Boston Celtics look like they're going to make the playoffs. They currently are tied with the Brooklyn Nets for the 7th and 8th spots in the Eastern Conference, with the Celtics holding the tiebreakers, so they currently hold the 7th spot. They hold that spot by one game over the Indiana Pacers and just 2 games over the Miami Heat, with still 4 games left for the Celtics to play. So this is coming down to the wire. So it certainly is, you know, this certainly is a tight race here in the Eastern Conference for the Boston Celtics. So, Xander, my question to you is, what do the Celtics have to do during this final stretch to make the playoffs? And I think I may have made a mistake there. I think they may have just 3 games now. Yeah, I think it's just 3 games now that they have left.
Regardless,
in those last 3 games, what do the Celtics need to do to hang on to that last playoff spot?
Frankly, they just need to win out. They need to beat the Cavs, they need to beat the Bucks, and they need to beat the Raptors. Every one of those teams is above them. But the Cavs game is at home. We know how good this team is at home. And then the Bucks, I will admit the Bucks give the Celtics a bit of trouble every year. I don't understand how the Raptors made it all the way to 3rd place this year. Wow, it's crazy. It boggles my mind. But they're a good team. That may be the only hiccup in there, the only definite hiccup, I'd say. Unless the Cavs come out completely firing. But
here's the thing for me, is the Cavaliers have already basically got their playoff spot set. You know, they've got 4 games up on all teams below them for the second seed, and they're 9 games behind the Hawks for first. They're not going to be putting in much of an effort. You know, they're probably going to sit some of their best players for these last games. And the same thing with the Raptors. You know, they're a division winner, so they're pretty much guaranteed the 3rd spot. The Bucks are probably the only team that might have some fight left in them, just because they only have 2 games on the Celtics and Nets. So depending on where the standings are, you know, come that game against the Bucks, that's the only team I can really see putting up an actual fight. The Celtics are the team that has something to fight for, and they're a team that's been really putting up a fight at this late point in the season. They've been looking really good. They just beat the Cavaliers on the road last night, so
that's
the Celtics are looking really good right now. So I think they've just got to make sure they play their game, take advantage of the teams that are, you know, just sitting and waiting for playoff time, and they've, you know, just got to hope that things do not work out for those other teams just below them, because this is a close, tight-knit race, and they just got to make sure that they step up and that, you know, lack of experience doesn't cost them, because it is a very young team, and this is the time where teams either step up or fold. So, it you know, it's a lack of experience going against them, but they've got all that youthful energy going for them.
Also, you mentioned them playing teams that won't be putting up too much of a fight. But let's look at the Nets schedule, too. They're playing Milwaukee, Chicago, and Orlando. Orlando's playing for next to nothing. Milwaukee's still fighting. Chicago maybe not, but I would say that they have the harder schedule, though, at the same time. So I have optimism about the Celtics. I think the Celtics have a very good shot at making the playoffs this year.
Yeah, Brooklyn definitely has a tougher schedule. You know, I think Chicago will be fighting to hold on to that 4 seed as they have just a 2-game lead over the Wizards in that spot right now. And like I said, Milwaukee is just fighting to hang on to its 6th spot at the moment. Orlando, not as much of a fighter. They're in like 3rd to last in the Eastern Conference, so they're probably at this point fighting for a draft pick, you know. But like you said, you know, schedule actually looks very favorable to the Celtics, so hopefully we can see some good things out of the Celtics. What do you think will be the keys to the game? Who do you think really needs to step up for the Celtics?
I think, let's see, Sollinger needs to keep on rebounding in this game. Smart's got to keep on playing the way he is. And then I want to see some solid play by Kelly Olynyk. I want to see Kelly Olynyk stepping up and playing like he did earlier on in the season. I need him to be the underdog player and to come out and show that he's still in the same form and he's still okay.
Yep. See, I'm going to say that one of the big key players, and this may come as a surprise, I think one of the key players to this Celtics run is Evan Turner. You know, Isaiah Thomas as a point guard, he's going to come off the bench and he's going to put up your double-digit points and your almost double-digit assists every night. Marcus Smart is going to get your, you know, a little bit of everything across the board that he does every night. You know, those guys, they do what they do and they do it very well and pretty consistently. Evan Turner is a bit of a wild card. You know, he either does amazing or he does a little underwhelming, you know. And lately he's been doing pretty amazing on more than one occasion. He's had a couple of triple-doubles lately, which is outstanding. He's had a couple of 30-point nights, which is awesome for the Celtics. And I think if he steps up and provides that X factor, you know, on top of what they've already got with guys like Isaiah Thomas and Tyler Zeller and Jay Crowder, Kelly Olynyk and Marcus Smart and all those guys, I think if he can provide that X factor that he can be, because he has been pretty good this season, I think if he can provide that, then I think this Celtics team can make that push into the playoffs. Maybe
also,
even make
like
a push up the seed, who knows?
Well, also, like we said earlier, he's definitely the most underrated player on this team that everyone forgets about. Even I just completely forgot about him right there, but he's been that player that the opponents have just said, okay, they have Marcus Smart, they have Olynyk, they have blah, blah, blah. But they don't mention Evan Turner's name because he's the guy that was a questionable signing in the offseason. He was the guy who didn't get a chance to rise up. And then he just shows up like he's been playing full-time his whole career with the Celtics this year.
Absolutely. All right, well, we'll certainly see how those two playoff situations play out for both the Bruins and Celtics, and we'll be seeing what the playoff picture looks like by next week. But for now, we're going to move on back to football. It is the off season for the Patriots right now, but so much is happening for them. First, the big news, LeGarrette Blount, who turned into the number one running back for the team about, you know, midway, two-thirds through the season and was such a big contributor for them on the running game, has been suspended for the first game of the season due to violating the league's substance abuse policy. You know, people are saying this is probably related to his drug-related arrest last year. So my question to you, Xander, is how is the loss of Blount for the first game going to affect the Patriots? It is just one game, but still a tough loss, you know, losing LeGarrette Blount. So what are your thoughts on this?
Come on. I mean, he didn't learn the first time when he got suspended not to use anything. Come on, buddy, learn your lesson. It's not so hard. It just frustrates me as someone who is, like, a big advocate for, like, the purity of a game. But I think it's just stupid that he didn't learn his lesson. But as for affecting the game, honestly think it really just depends on who we're playing in that game. The first game of the season is always a huge game for the Patriots. It doesn't usually matter who we're playing, but if we're, now that we're defending a title, I think it really matters a lot, because if it's a tough NFC team, like if we're playing the Packers, that's going to affect the game a lot. Or if we're playing a team in Seattle or something like that, or it's going to be a, I think it really depends on who we play for how much this affects them.
You see, now I'm going to take a slightly different approach here, and I'm going to say that this might, the question here is, to me, is will Bill Belichick give him playing time after the suspension is the question to me. Just because of how he put Jonas Gray in the doghouse after all that happened last season. I mean, my guess is he'll let him play. He let Brandon Browner play after his four-game suspension starting last season. So my guess is he'll let him play. But I'm going to take a bit of a twist here and say that this might actually help the Patriots having him suspended for the first game. You look at how the Patriots tend to do in most of their seasons. They start out having struggles. They start out, you know, almost stumbling out of the gate. And then they just find their stride, you know, about a third or a half of the way through the season, and then they just kind of take off. And by the end, they wind up being one of the top seeds in the playoffs. And I feel like losing LeGarrette Blount for just a game not only doesn't affect them that much, but almost actually helps to have teams underestimate them the way that sometimes happens after they stumble through the first few weeks. I mean, it happened this past season. First 4 weeks in, they were 2-2, and everybody's like, oh, the Patriots are washed up. Tom Brady's done. Put in Jimmy Garoppolo. And that keeps happening. It's like, my goodness, how many times does this team have to make the playoffs before you realize that watching them for the first 4 weeks is ridiculous? It doesn't mean anything. So that's
more like an extended preseason.
Yeah. So that's my take on this, is not only may it not hurt them, it might, in a twisted way, in a very twisted, unintentional way, it might actually help them. That's my thoughts on that. But we're going to move on that very twisted note, we're going to move on to another running back with the Patriots. Well, former running back at this point, because Stephen Ridley has now signed a one-year deal with the New York Jets. That's right, guys. Another running back has gone to New York. It seems to be kind of a pattern with the Patriots, you know, whether it's Curtis Martin, Shane Vereen, or Stephen Ridley, they all just seem to want to go to New York. It's beautiful, isn't it? It's just beautiful.
Both those metal buildings.
Yeah, so we talked about we've discussed on this show the impact of losing, you know, guys like Shane Vereen and all the guys that the Patriots have lost so far. So very quickly, talk to me about what is the impact of losing Ridley.
You're losing the guy who fumbled the ball all the time. Frankly, I'm not going to miss him. I'm sorry. I mean, I'll admit, I'm going to miss his speed. I'm going to miss that aspect of him. I'm going to miss his ability to get around defenders, but I'm not going to miss him fumbling the ball all the time and getting hurt almost every year. I say the Jets.
I don't get the fumble stereotype about him. He didn't fumble all that much. He fumbled four times for the most time in his season. You look at other running backs, that's pretty average, actually, given the amount of touches he got. Peyton Hillis, the year that before he got on the Madden cover, fumbled five times. You know, Stephen Ridley didn't fumble a lot. He just fumbled at bad times, which made people remember when he fumbled. So I don't think it was that he fumbled a lot, and I always just kind of hated that stereotype. But
that's my point.
A tough loss.
The times that he fumbled, not that he fumbled a lot. It's just he would not step up in big situations. I'm just going to be straight out and say it. He's a stereotypical Jets running back. They fumble at the wrong times, and they mess games up. Welcome to New York. Welcome home.
All right. Well, on that note, on the note of the Jets getting apparently a stereotypical Jets running back, we are going to call it quits on this show. So thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Boston Sports Beat. I am your host, Jesse Mayfield Sheehan, for Xander Manning. Thank you so much for tuning in. Be sure to tune in next. This has been the Boston Sports Beat.